This Weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Rationing a life-saving device. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
Although ventilator shortages were mostly avoided during COVID, a life-saving therapy called ECMO is scarce. Doctors are forced to choose which patients get it.
Retailers recognize our frustration with fitting rooms that are still closed. Hear how they're trying to improve things.
On the money front, three behavioral finance traps that can be costly to stock market investors.
And the companies scrambling to develop products and services for stressed out Americans.
One thing that federal health researchers are noting is that rising stress levels is affecting every group of people. So no matter your age, your gender, your race, your ethnicity, you are reporting that your stress levels are on the rise.
Ellen Byron at the Wall Street Journal on the makers of cars and cereals trying to soothe our anxieties. Well, while ventilator shortages have been largely averted in the U.S., a life-saving therapy known as ECMO is scarce. That means hospitals and doctors have to choose which critically ill patients get it. Sherry Fink, correspondent at the New York Times, says in the absence of regional sharing systems to ensure fairness and match resources to needs, hospitals and clinicians are left to apply differing criteria, with insurance coverage, geography, and even personal appeals having an influence. Sherry, take us through it.
Yes, we were all afraid of ventilators being in short supply at the start of the pandemic. There was a lot of planning around that, fears of rationing. And, you know, there was a lot of concerted action to make sure that that didn't occur. That was something we didn't want to see in the U.S. and were able to avert. But a quiet drama has been playing out inside hospitals over a different treatment. It's more of a last resort treatment for people who have severe COVID, whose lungs are failing, where even the ventilator isn't helping. And this is sort of like a heart-lung machine. It's similar in concept, where the blood goes out of your body. It's connected to a series of pieces of equipment that add oxygen, like your lungs would do if they were working, take out the carbon dioxide, and then pump that blood back in. And it helps the lungs rest. It gives the body a chance to recover, and keeping that person alive, keeping that critical oxygen going to the brain. And so doctors, you know, use this for other things, sometimes after heart surgery, sometimes in bad flu cases. And they said, let's see, you know, at the start of the pandemic, could this help some patients who really would otherwise die? And in fact, at first, it looked like more than half of the people who were, you know, otherwise pretty much going to die ended up recovering and being able to be, you know, their life saved with this very, very intensive treatment. It's about 50% now. But the problem is, it's really rare. Like you said, it is not available. It's less than 10% of hospitals have it, and they have very limited ability to run it, not really so much because of the equipment, but because it takes an extraordinary amount of staffing to watch the patient, you know, like a hawk, because their blood is leaving their body, coming back in. And so what happened was, doctors literally were put in the position of deciding between individual patients who would get that chance at life.
We're speaking with Sherry Fink, correspondent at the New York Times. Her piece is called The Rationing of a Last Resort COVID Treatment, and she looked at this system called ECMO. So you're a physician also. What is it like to have a conversation with the family in which you have to tell them, or you're suggesting to them, your patient is on ECMO, but we need it for somebody who has a more realistic chance of surviving?
So the article I wrote in the New York Times, it starts with exactly such a conversation. And I was there, I spent time in many hospitals over the last year and a half just observing. And, it, you know, it's like clear that there's not enough to go around, but that doesn't you know, there are these choices that doctors are making between patients that do have an impact. So even though right now it's very hard to expand the capacity, they're working on that. They want the technology to get better, so it won't take so many resources. But they have to make these choices, which can have life and death consequences. And so I watched a doctor, a really caring, wonderful doctor, talking to a family whose loved one had been on this technology for a while, wasn't doing well. The doctors had been recommending for a number of days that they be, you know, that the family let go and allow that patient to pass. And the difficulty was, you know, you remember the horror of families not being able to visit their loved ones in hospitals. And
man,
so very hard to get your mind wrapped around saying goodbye when you can't even physically go in. And then the doctor was trying to explain that there were other patients waiting, that the hospital's at capacity for this technique. And the family just stopped the doctor right there and said, are you saying that you want this machine for somebody else? And that was such a tough, tough moment.
Thanks, Sherry. Sherry Fink, correspondent at The New York Times. Coming up next, addressing the fitting room dilemma. Enjoy a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies' Black Friday in July event. Get amazing savings with up to 50% off high-performance computers and tech built for business, and be able to take your office with you with Windows 10 Pro. Plus, get great offers on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and more, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. And speak to a Dell Technologies advisor today. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. With some fitting rooms still closed and with more people shopping on the internet for apparel and footwear, return rates have skyrocketed during the COVID pandemic. Now, with the health crisis serving as a wake-up call, retailers, including the biggest in the country, Walmart, are looking for ways to fix the fitting room dilemma. Insight from Lauren Thomas, retail reporter at CNBC. Lauren, what are you hearing?
It's kind of shocking, to be honest, that this is still an issue. Obviously, this time a year ago, a number of retailers, and specifically retailers that sell apparel, were forced to shut their stores for a period of time. And since those reopened, or since they have reopened, some companies are still choosing to keep those fitting rooms closed. Zara is one example that I think has gone viral on social media for this reason. Shoppers have grown frustrated. They visit a Zara store, and you'll often see these long lines because many people are actually waiting to return things that didn't fit. Either they bought online or they bought it in stores and then had to go home and try it on and then bring it back to the store. And that adds on, you know, massive costs really for retailers to process these returns. So yeah, it's interesting, and I think there are probably a number of reasons why some companies are still opting to keep those dressing rooms closed. I think one factor is labor and a shortage of labor in stores to maintain those fitting rooms. But yeah, shoppers actually returned about $430 billion in merchandise last year. That's according to a study by the National Retail Federation. And clothing was more than 12% of that, and actually one of the biggest categories of returned items. So clearly, you know, there's a dollar value to put behind all of this. And the closed fitting rooms are just another headache that's leading to even more returns still.
All right. So as you point out in the story, retailers are turning to some of these startups like 3D Look. What happens with that? What do they do?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I've seen, you know, a number of these tech startups pop up on my radar for years now. But I think the pandemic really offered an opportunity for them to shine. So you mentioned 3D Look. Essentially, this is it's a virtual reality type experience, and they use augmented reality to where, as a user and a consumer, you can go in and scan your body, take a photo of yourself, essentially, which I know sounds a little scary, but this app is able to determine, you know, your body type and fit and what size jeans you would wear, for example. They've partnered with a denim retailer, and that was one of their first beta testings with this company called 1822 Denim. Then the app, you know, without having to go into a fitting room, the app tells you exactly what size you would be. So this startup is just one example of a company that's trying to solve that fitting room dilemma, is how I refer to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think some consumers, many consumers, are still hesitant that A, you know, this experience would even work, that it would be accurate. And B, I think there is some hesitancy to, you know, scan your body and kind of have all that data uploaded into one of these apps.
Thanks, Lauren. Lauren Thomas, retail reporter at CNBC. Coming up next, how companies are trying to soothe our anxieties. Apply for a loan with a bank and you might get free coffee. But Marcus by Goldman Sachs offers personal loans with no fees, ever. So consolidate debt with a no-fee personal loan from Marcus by Goldman Sachs or get free coffee. Go to marcus.com to learn more about our no-fee personal loans and other products today. Lending and deposits provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Well, long before COVID hit this year, or last year rather, rising stress was identified as one of the major concerns for Americans. Now, more than a year into the pandemic, consumers' stress levels have been soaring and companies are rushing to help. More from this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
Companies have a new target market these days, those of us who are stressed out. As Ellen Byron of the Wall Street Journal tells us, makers of everything from cars to cereal are pushing products that aim to soothe our pandemic-fueled anxieties. Ellen, what do we know about people who are feeling the most stress right now?
Well, one thing that federal health researchers are noting is that rising stress levels is affecting every group of people. So no matter your age, your gender, your race, your ethnicity, you are reporting in government surveys that your stress levels are on the rise. And this being a giant consumer need, product makers are paying close attention to this as well. This actually was on many companies' radars even before the pandemic, because more and more people, Americans, were reporting that stress was becoming a bigger health priority for them. And so that being a consumer need, of course, consumer product companies are zeroing in on ways that their wide range of products could potentially address that.
Ellen, let's start with some of the expected ones. Certainly companies that make things like bath products or personal care products are getting into this, but they've been in that space already.
That's right. And so what's interesting is that there's a lot of products that you wouldn't necessarily think of as stress relievers that are claiming to be so. For example, a luxury car. Lincoln has really designed its whole marketing message around the idea that it's a sanctuary, and many of their interior car features are meant to offer stress relief for you. The seats massage, many of the interior materials dampen sound. They even worked with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra to compose soft chimes to play instead of those jarring beeps and other alerts that a car might play.
Another funny one that you talk about in your story is the Post-it notes from 3M. What's funny about those?
Well, usually Post-it notes are a rather utilitarian office supply, but they now are designed a line of notes that are really meant to help reinforce popular wellness practices. So things like habit tracking. You can buy a specific Post-it note that helps you tick off each day that you meet perhaps a personal care resolution that you might have. Others have encouraging notes printed upon them, or help you prioritize, for example, more of this and less of that to reinforce positive thinking.
We're speaking with Ellen Byron of the Wall Street Journal. Now, Ellen, you also talk about PepsiCo and Coca-Cola. Those are companies that are mostly aligned with caffeine products and things to boost us, but they're both coming out with drinks that soothe. Talk about those.
Yes. So these companies talk about including stress is a new frontier in drinks. And for so long, we think of reaching for a beverage when we want our energy to go up. But what some new products are claiming is that they will actually help you bring your energy down. So PepsiCo, for example, last November launched a new line of drinks called Driftwell. And it's designed, it says, with relaxation in mind, and it's meant to help you fall asleep. And funny enough, even the size of the can is meant to reduce your stress because it's only 7.5 ounces because you don't want to drink a lot before you go to bed. There's another line of drinks from PepsiCo called Soul Boost, and that's a line of sparkling waters. And some of those versions, including one called Ease, is meant to support relaxation as well. Coca-Cola Company's Smart Water Plus line of bottled waters includes a Tranquility version that that is meant for helping you hydrate and decompress at the same time.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka with Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Byron. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Do you love seafood when you're out to eat but never make it for yourself at home? Yeah, me too. But the key to restaurant quality at home starts with high-quality seafood and simple techniques from Wild Alaskan Company. With Wild Alaskan Company, you're getting high-quality, sustainably sourced, wild-caught seafood delivered right to your door. Choose from salmon, whitefish, or a combination. Money back if you're not happy. I went with the Wild Combo Box. Fired it up on the grill with a little garlic, lemon, and parsley. It was like sitting at some dockside restaurant in the last frontier. Each piece of fish was individually wrapped and labeled. Plus, the packaging can be composted. Wild Alaskan Company seafood is always wild, never farmed or modified, and contains no antibiotics. It's how nature intended it. And right now, you can get $15 off your first box of premium seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. That's wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon for $15 off your first box. wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka coming up this half hour, getting your kid his first smartphone. Also, three finance traps for investors, plus where dogs rule in New York City, and the singer who went viral after Friends filmed a heartwarming surprise. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, if you are the parent of a tween or teen, you've likely heard this question in some form. Can I have my own phone? It's something to consider as kids prepare to go back to school. So what should you consider when introducing your children to their first smartphone? Brett Molina, reporter at USA Today, spoke to parents and experts about what to know when approaching that big tech milestone. Brett, help us out.
Yeah, well, you know, it's an interesting time for parents because this is, you know, COVID, the pandemic and all the restrictions related to it are lifting. And also a lot of kids around that age are reaching a time where they're a lot more mobile than we're used to. And so a lot of times parents are thinking, well, how can I, you know, just kind of keep tabs on my kids? You know, as they do these things, they might have different after school activities. They're also older. They might be doing some other things with friends on their own. So you want a way to keep in touch with them. And that's where I think we're seeing a lot of parents consider a smartphone. And there was a recent survey from Pew that mentioned 73% of American parents believe around 12 years old is the right age for kids to have their first phone. So this is kind of the time where parents are really thinking about, you know, taking that plunge.
Okay. Which, you know, if you have a seemingly mature 10-year-old, doesn't mean you couldn't get one then, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's not necessarily the age that's the most important thing. And a lot of the experts that I talked to mentioned this. Younger, there might be a kid that's younger than 12 that might, you know, that has the emotional and mental maturity to have a phone. There might be children that are older than that. You might want to go 13, 14. It just really depends on the child. If you feel like they have the maturity to be able to handle a phone, also the responsibility, because the last thing you want is to get them this brand new phone and then they end up losing it within a week, which is something kids are known to do sometimes.
Right.
So there's a lot of those different factors to consider.
We're speaking with Brett Molina, consumer tech reporter at USA Today. His story is called Your Child's First Smartphone, What You Should Consider Before Buying. Maybe you're getting your kid one as we emerge from the pandemic, maybe before they go back to school in the fall. But one of the big things, obviously, since as parents, we often operate on the defensive or in fear of what we might do wrong. So once the kid gets the phone, how about restrictions or limits to place on it?
Well, obviously, I think one of the first things you want to do when you get the phone is check all the parental controls. iPhone, for example, they have lots of different options that you can use to restrict what your child sees on their phone. You can restrict purchases from places like iTunes or from the App Store. You can also restrict the types of content that they're seeing as well. So if there's movies or TV shows that you don't think are appropriate, you can block those as well. Also, the websites they visit. They even have a family sharing option where you can actually, the kids have to request apps from the parent in order to be able to watch them on their device. Google also has similar systems in place where you can do a lot of the same stuff. There are also third-party apps that a lot of parents can use as well, like OurPact or Bark. And they go a step further. You can do a lot of the restrictions that you have natively on the iPhone or Android, but you can even do stuff like monitor the messages or emails that your kids receive as well if you want just an extra layer of just kind of watching what your kids are doing.
Thanks, Brett. Brett Molina, reporter at USA Today. Coming up next, financial traps for investors.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. It's not always the stock market that worries personal finance experts. It's sometimes the stock market investors. Jonathan Clements, founder of HumbleDollar.com, says even if the overall market appears no riskier than usual, there's a danger that we'll put ourselves in financial peril by falling into one of three behavioral finance traps. Jonathan, how do you see it?
So right now, after the strong stock market performance, not only over the past year, but also over the past decade, you know, a lot of investors are feeling pretty cocky. And that brings us to maybe the number one mistake that investors make, which is overconfidence. You know, the more money we make in the financial markets, the more overconfident we become. And the problem with overconfidence is that we think that we can start to outperform the market averages. And that leads us, one, to trade too much. And despite all those zero commissions out there that, you know, the discount brokerage firms are offering, trading is still costly. Every time you trade a stock, you lose a little money to the bid-ask spread, and that's going to hurt over time. And second, if we're overconfident, we tend to make these big, undiversified bets. We put a lot of money onto Dogecoin or Tesla or Peloton Interactive. And if we're unlucky, you know, those big bets are going to come back to haunt us. And most of us, and this is important, most of us will be unlucky. And the reason is this. Every year, the stock market averages are skewed higher by a minority of stocks that have spectacular returns. Yeah. And if you don't own those big winners, you're going to end up with market lagging performance. So my advice, don't make those big undiversified bets. Instead, broadly diversify. That way, whatever the market delivers, you should get something similar.
The trading volume right now is a pretty good indicator that at least some people have overconfidence.
Absolutely. You know, to trade, to buy or sell, we need to feel we know what we're doing. And in 2020 and 2021, daily stock market trading volume is running 63% above 2019's level. So yeah, a lot of investors out there are feeling pretty sure about what they're doing.
Point number two that concerns you, the house money effect. Explain that.
So the house money effect is this. Imagine that you go into a casino and you get lucky early in the evening. You know, you've got this cushion of gains and you suddenly feel like, hey, I can be a bigger roller. I can make some bigger bets here. And as a consequence, because you feel like you're playing with the house money, you end up making bigger bets at the casino. The same thing has happens with investors. Because they've done so well in recent years, they feel like they have this cushion of gains. And this, again, like overconfidence, leads investors to make these big undiversified bets that potentially are going to come back to haunt them. Again, we're talking about the big bet on Dogecoin, on Bitcoin, on Tesla, on Netflix, whatever it is. And while for some people this is going to pan out, for most people, they will not.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com, and he's written a piece about his concerns, not so much with the stock market, but with stock market investors. So finish up here with point number three about extrapolating returns.
A lot of investors naively take whatever's performed well in the recent past and assume it's going to continue to perform well in the future. And this is why, for instance, at the end of 2020, we had a lot of people with a lot of money riding in these big cap growth stocks that have done so well in recent years. You know, we're talking about Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix. They just simply assumed that these stocks were going to continue to do well. But it wasn't just that. It wasn't just extrapolating these returns. Today, thanks to social media, what people do is they go online and they start encouraging other people and taking encouragement from others who are also invested in these stocks. And we get what experts in behavioral finance call herding activity, where people pile into these stocks. And the classic examples of herding activity this year have been what we've seen with GameStop, what we've seen with AMC. And the problem is all these people encouraging each other to get into these stocks, they drive up the prices. And then when there's nobody left to buy, boom, the stocks come plunging back to earth and a lot of people lose a lot of money.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder of HumbleDollar.com. Coming up next, where dogs have the run of the place. Enjoy a powerful business upgrade with Dell Technologies' Black Friday in July event. Get amazing savings with up to 50% off high-performance computers and tech built for business, and be able to take your office with you with Windows 10 Pro. Plus, get great offers on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and more, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL, and speak to a Dell Technologies advisor today. Well, it's not always easy to find a place in a cramped city for your dog to run around freely. While the New York City Department of Parks and Recreation maintains several dozen public dog runs featuring amenities ranging from spray hydrants to climbing mounds, some of the city's fussier furred residents prefer a members-only situation. Ann Cadet at the Wall Street Journal found some of them. Ann, what did you see?
People love dogs, and they also have little tiny apartments, so most people take their dog to a dog run. And there's 84 public dog runs around the city that are all maintained by the Parks Department, and anybody can go, and for some people that's a problem because you don't know who the dogs are and if they're good dogs or bad dogs, if they've been vaccinated and spayed. So there are, I found like five or six private dog runs where you pay membership dues and you get screened, and then you know, only like these very exclusively screened dogs can get in and out of the park.
Wow. It sounds like a version of doggy daycare, or no?
It's not like doggy daycare because you go with your pet. So it'd be like if you took your pet to the park and you took him off the leash and you could run around. And these places are much larger than a doggy daycare. Typically a doggy daycare would be about 1,000 square feet. And most of these are about 3,000 to 5,000 square feet.
Wow. So who operates them? These just people who happen to own a piece of property like this?
Well, a lot of them are actually, I think this is cool. They're like neighborhood volunteer groups. My favorite of these is called Astro's Dog Run, and it was founded way back in the 1990s by a German shepherd from Pasadena, who before like dog runs were kind of a thing, but he was from California and he was like, I need some space. So they got a little patch of land owned by the Port Authority, which I believe they have an agreement where they pay for the insurance, but they get to use the land for free. And it's a really weird little space. It's wedged. It's in the west side of Manhattan, like west of Midtown by the Lincoln Tunnel. So on one side, there's a highway going into the Lincoln Tunnel. On the other side, there's a bus ramp going to the Port Authority bus depot. So you can kind of imagine how loud and crazy it is. But in the middle, there's this very pretty little dog run. And they have a pergola and lots of plants and benches and rocking chairs. And it's very strange to be in this little dog run. You're kind of surrounded by buses and traffic and skyscrapers on all sides, but the dogs are very peaceful and happy.
Wow. And so whatever fees you might pay are to offset, I guess, insurance, maintenance of some kind?
Supplies. There's filtered water for the dogs, of course, because these are fancy dogs, and there's free tennis balls, and they have to pay for the plants. But there are some places where the fees can get pretty steep. There's a private dog training school called School for the Dogs in Manhattan's East Village. And there, the annual dues are $2,200 a year. And for that, you can take your dog 5 times a month and for a half hour session. So it's a much different kind of scenario. The deal here is that there's always a trainer on hand. So he's kind of like a helicopter parent for dogs, and he'll play with the dogs and introduce toys and make sure the dogs don't fight with each other. And he'll like tell the owners how to interact with their dogs. And it's very highly supervised, only 6 dogs per session. And to get in, it's really hard. You have to fill out all these essay questions, and you have to take a quiz about dog run comportment, and you have to like submit a video of your dogs playing with other dogs, and a lot of dogs don't make the cut.
Yeah.
So you can be sure that your dog is, I guess, with other very good dogs as opposed to the bad dogs in the public runs.
Thanks, Ann. Ann Cadet, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, a heartwarming surprise for a young singer. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy. We'll finish with this. Every artist remembers the first time they heard their song played on the radio. But for Luya, the moment came with a bonus, a viral video, courtesy of some of his very good friends. Last week, the New Jersey-based singer uploaded a video to the social media platform TikTok, which shows him riding in a car with 3 buddies who promised him a surprise. The group is seen listening to a local radio station as the DJ announces a new artist. Luya's new single, called I Used to Care, begins to play. Luya, born Louis Vigorito, yells with excitement as his pals celebrate. The minute-long clip quickly exploded on TikTok, notching more than 3 million views in its first 24 hours. NJ.com, by the way, describes Luya as smooth hip-hop meets acoustic sound, reminiscent of Post Malone. Luya, by the way, is scheduled to headline a sold-out live performance at House of Independence in Asbury Park July 23rd. His new single, La Da Di Da, drops the same day. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.